The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're off and running on another week of broadcasting here on KPCG, and the live stream is at kpcg.fm or at the trumpet.com website. We're having to prepare a little earlier than usual because of the time change in America. For some reason, the world can't get this together and do it all at the same time, but for the next 2 weeks, here in the UK, around Europe, I'm not sure what other time zones. You'll have to look into it yourself. But for the next 2 weeks, we'll be coming to you an hour earlier in the UK and in Europe so that the time can play or the program can play at the same time in the United States, which has moved their clocks forward. Or if they haven't, well, everything's mixed up, I guess. Let's just assume it's 7 a.m. over at our headquarters facility in Edmond, Oklahoma. I thought I'd begin today with a couple of emails because I think they both tie in with what I'd like to discuss. We had a program last week, some of you may recall. We played on March the 8th, but we drew attention to the March the 7th court case victory from back in 2003. And I played some clips from my father's announcement. He announced it at our Robbers Cave college campout on Friday night, March the 7th, 2003. And then he made the same announcements the next day at Edmond, our headquarters congregation. And so these two emails that I'll quote from here, they are in response to that program from last Thursday. I forget what I titled it. David, here it says in the email, David, the day David beat Goliath. And this one comes from South Africa. It says, I have just finished listening to your program about the day David beat Goliath, and I can't stop the tears from welling up in my eyes when you played the clip where Mr. Gerald Flurry announced winning the court case. And when everyone burst into applause, I could hardly keep myself from applauding as well. I listen to the program while I'm at work, so I am sure it would have caused quite a stir had I done that. It says, it was such a moving program today, especially in lieu of all that is happening in God's work today. We certainly have come a long way since that sermon where Mr. Flurry announced winning the court case. And then it says here, thank you so much for your programs, and I just wanted to let you know that I listen regularly and really enjoy being able to have this wonderful input. Another one here, that's from South Africa, and another one comes from Ontario, Canada, and this one's really interesting as well, some history that I think many of you are familiar with. It says, this program today means everything to my spiritual growth. It brings back so many memories of my struggle to break through all the religious darkness out there and to find God's true church. Back in the year 2000, I caught wind of the PCG in a court battle to win the rights to print and distribute Herbert Armstrong's works. I remember thinking, what an honorable task. At that time, I had very little knowledge of what had happened to the Worldwide Church of God after Mr. Armstrong's death. I only knew generally that something horrible had taken place and that I had stopped receiving the plain truth because of fundamental changes made to what Mr. Armstrong had taught. I never was a member of the WCG, but I knew I really wanted a copy of Mystery of the Ages. I had been repenting and praying for God to show me His church. At that time, I was also looking into the Living and United Churches. These are offshoots of the Worldwide Church of God. It says, I had no idea which of the three churches, the Philadelphia Church of God, the Living Church, or the United Church, I had no idea which was the true Church of God. I only knew the Bible said God has a church which could not be destroyed, and that's the one I was looking for. She says here, I also knew positively Mr. Armstrong was part of it. He certainly was, that sixth era of God's true church. It says further, I had been receiving literature from all three churches, and all three were talking about Mr. Armstrong, which further confused me as I understood that God has one church. I finally stepped out and asked for a ministerial visit from the Living Church in early January 2003. The date was set to meet. Then, lo and behold, at the same time, the PCG won all of Mr. Armstrong's major works. I was blown away by that revelation. I wrote all three churches and asked why they all were espousing Mr. Armstrong but were separate churches. Each church wrote back with their reasons, but by the time I had received the replies, God had already made up my mind. God would never allow his works to be placed within a church that he had not ordained. So the rest was easy for me. I canceled my visitation with the Living Church, fully explaining my reasons, and set up a visit with the Philadelphia Church of God, and the rest is history, she says. She says here, going back to those roots always rejuvenates my conviction and love for God, and hearing this program today goes right to my spiritual soul. Thank you for keeping and remembering important PCG dates. Well, that is something that we've tried to stress, particularly over the last year, those important PCG dates or anniversaries, because in going back to them, it does take us back to our roots, and it does rejuvenate us. March 7th, 2003, a tremendous victory for God's work. Over the weekend, we passed another anniversary, March 11th, from 1989, the 1150 days prophecy. This is discussed in my father's booklet, Daniel, Unsealed at Last. And that prophecy, the 1150 days prophecy, you can find it in Daniel chapter 8. And it's about a time when the truth of God would be cast down to the ground, the truth that God's church had and distributed and taught and preached. There's a prophecy there in Daniel 8 that says there would be a time in these latter days when that truth would be cast to the ground and the work would stop for 1150 days. Well, let's look over at that prophecy. This is Daniel chapter 8. And just to summarize some of the contents in that booklet, Daniel Unsealed at Last, my father writes about this 1150-day period, starting with the death of Herbert Armstrong on January 16th, 1986, and then carrying right on through to March 11th, 1989. And we'll come to the significance of that date in just a bit. But first, as far as Daniel 8 goes, I mean, that prophecy, that passage is for the end time, and it's mainly applying to God's church. If you look at Daniel 8 and verse 26, the Moffat puts it this way, it relates to the far future. And if you know anything about the prophet Daniel and what he went through to receive the revelation from God, you can read some about it in Daniel 9 and Daniel 10. In Daniel 10, there's an instance where the prophet fasted for 21 days to receive revelation. And the archangel Gabriel told him that the reason it took that long was because of the violent spiritual warfare going on between Gabriel and Michael and against Satan the devil. Satan was trying to prevent this message, this revelation, from making it through to God's prophet. And there's other instances in the book of Daniel where Daniel's recording all of this, and as it says in chapter 12, he didn't even understand the meaning of it. So clearly it's for the future, for far into the future, as Moffat says. You can see that there in Daniel 8 and verse 26. Verse 17 of Daniel 8, same thing. It's for the time of the end. It's for the time of the end. So here in Daniel 8, we'll start in verse 9. It talks about this little horn that's to emerge. Verse 9 says, "And out of one of them came forth a little horn, which waxed exceeding great toward the south and toward the east and toward the pleasant land." So this is a little horn. It's not the same as the little horn in Daniel 7, where it refers to a great false church. But here it's talking about a little horn that rises up, or that springs up out of the four horns from Alexander the Great's empire, the Greco-Macedonian Empire. After Alexander's death, the empire divided into four. And out from that emerges, as you can see from some of the better, probably older commentaries, but out from that, this little horn emerges in the Middle East. And of course, anciently, it refers to Antiochus Epiphanes, who came out of those four divisions of the Greco-Macedonian Empire, and in a lot of ways bridged the gap, you could say, between the Greco-Macedonian Empire and the Roman Empire that would come later. Well, Antiochus was a ruthless dictator who, through deceitful lies and flatteries, he obtained rule in Palestine in about 176 BC or so. And he was responsible for setting up an abomination of desolation. He pillaged and desecrated the Jews' temple in Jerusalem. Abominable acts. Desolation. That's what he left in his trail. The Greek historian Polybius, he observed that Antiochus despoiled most sanctuaries, and he put unbearable taxes upon the Jewish people. Werner Keller, in his book, The Bible as History, he said, "Throughout the turbulent changes of its past history, Israel had been spared none of the horror and ignominy which could befall a nation, but never before, neither under the Assyrians nor under the Babylonians, had it received such a blow as the edict issued by Antiochus Epiphanes, by which he hoped to crush and destroy the faith of Israel." That was his goal. He wanted to crush and destroy the faith of the Jewish people. My father, he gave a couple of programs on Daniel 8 and the 1150 days prophecy back in 2004 and 2005. We've arranged for a few clips from these programs. This would take us back, I guess, 13, 14 years ago. But this first one here comes from a show on April 4th, 2004, titled "The Spiritual Abomination." Here's my father on clip number one.
Anciently, Antiochus was a type of this evil leader of the physical abomination, but he's also a type of an evil leader that's actually going to do all this damage inside of God's own church. A man is going to do that in this end time.
So as he was saying there, I mean, there's some duality here. Well, even beyond that, there's an Antiochus type that's going to head up the final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. But there's also one that was right within God's church, an Antiochus type, who really did go about crushing and destroying the faith of spiritual Israel. Verse 10 here in Daniel 8, it says, "And it waxed great, even to the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the host and of the stars to the ground and stamped upon them." So this evil power or movement, it stamped upon them, these saints of God, who, well, they open themselves up to an attack from the devil because of transgression, as we'll note here in just a second. But Strong's Concordance defines host this way. It says, "A mass of persons, especially organized for war." That's what the meaning of the word host is. War. And in this case, I mean, in the case of the devil, of course, he has an army of demons. God, of course, has an army of angels. And so it's talking about spiritual war. Verse 11 says, yes, he magnified himself, this Antiochus, this spiritual Antiochus, even against the Prince of Hosts, as it should read, and by him the daily sacrifice, or just the daily, sacrifice is in italics, but the daily, the work, was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. So here again, it's written in all of this military language, a great battle. The Prince of the Host, even against the Prince of the Host, even against Jesus Christ. That's what this man, this Satan-inspired man, has the audacity to do, to go and actually fight against Jesus Christ and to destroy the work. This is why so many, I mean, you just heard it in that email I read at the top of the show, so much confusion, so many splinter groups, so many different organizations, and they're all talking. Well, I don't even know how much of this happens anymore. But at the time she came into the church, they all talked about Herbert Armstrong. But which one was carrying on the work, the same work? It's like I discussed with you last Thursday. I mean, the victory in the court case, what more proof do you need? Who is following in the steps of Herbert Armstrong? And even going back before the court case, I mean, Malachi's message, the centerpiece of our literature in the Philadelphia Church of God, I mean, Malachi's message laid it all out there. This spiritual Antiochus who magnified himself. It's very similar language to what you read over in 2 Thessalonians 2 in verse 3 about this great falling away from the truth, headed up by a man who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped. That's how much he magnified himself. This man of sin, as he's referred to in 2 Thessalonians 2, this lawless imposter, this son of destruction. This is how the Bible describes him, a teacher of lies, a treacherous scholar, the man of sin, showing himself to be God. Well, here in Daniel 8 and verse 11, it says, yes, he magnified himself against the Prince of the Host. My father wrote in Daniel, unsealed at last, he said, there are two great sins. The daily or work of God has been taken away by this evil man. And also the place of the sanctuary, the place where God's work was being done, was cast down. Two great sins. It says further in verse 12, and an host was given him against the daily by reason of transgression, and it cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced and it prospered. Notice the daily or the work, it was taken away or it stopped because of transgression. It's because of transgression that the truth was cast to the ground. This is all, I mean, this is describing what happens in God's church before, just before the return of Christ, just before the great tribulation. Here comes a man acting like God, magnifying himself, even against the Prince of the Host, and casting God's truth to the ground. What did Joe DeCotch Jr. say in his book, Transformed by Truth? He said he had a Christian duty to keep Mystery of the Ages out of print. He had a Christian duty to prevent anyone from reading that book. That's quite an attitude. That's quite a lot of arrogance. Magnifying himself. That word transgression in verse 12, it means revolt, rebellion, sin. Sin against lawful authority. That's why the daily stopped. That's why the work screeched to a halt. Because of sin. That's how all of us That's how all of us invite attacks from the devil and stop supporting God's work the way that we should is transgression. My father in this same program, this is the spiritual abomination from April of 2004. Listen to what he said in the next clip. This is clip two.
But you see, that could never have happened if rebellious people within God's church had not surrendered to that demon army that you cannot see. You simply can't see it. This is not a physical army we're talking about here. Think about that. It's not a physical army. It's a spiritual army, or an army that's causing spiritual destruction unparalleled in the history of God's church. There's never been anything like it. Never. I mean, this is a war more damaging than anything that's ever happened in God's church. And why is it so damaging? Because it's destroying love and faith and hope. And God's people ought to be full of love and faith and hope and all of these wonderful characteristics, the very character of God. But Satan has destroyed that. And weak people have allowed it to happen. Remember, you see, this is a spiritual abomination, but it's still an army. And God says its goal is to cast truth to the ground, the very truth of God.
That was the goal, to bury the truth of God. And how did it happen? That's what he touches on there in that clip. It happened because weak people allowed it to happen. He said at the start of that bit that it never would have happened if rebellious people within God's church had not surrendered to the devil. If we surrender to the devil, if we surrender to sin, then we stop doing God's work. Now look at what happened. In the seventh era of God's church, Satan just utterly destroyed everything in his path. He made it desolate. I mean, he worked through human beings. He worked through the leadership at the very top of the worldwide Church of God. As soon as Mr. Armstrong died, January 16th, 1986, as soon as he died, well, destruction set in. It's interesting. I mean, we fought against them for 6 years in the litigation over Mystery of the Ages. That was from 1997 to 2003. And if you go back to the late 1970s, this was when Mr. Armstrong was alive. Some of you remember the state of California, of course, coming against the Worldwide Church of God. And again, trying to prevent the work from going forward. In that case, God didn't allow it to happen. Mr. Armstrong rallied the troops, stood up for God's truth, purged the church. But Ralph Helge, he was the head legal counsel in the church back in the 1970s, and as it happens, I mean, he was one that we also confronted during the Mystery of the Ages lawsuit. But here he is writing, this is 1979, he's writing about the church's attack against the state of California's attack against the Worldwide Church of God. And he says, what's really behind the scenes of this lawsuit? What's really and truly behind it? He says, I'll tell you what it is. It's a few dissidents that want to take power and change the doctrines of the Church of God. They don't like the way it's being run. And they don't like the doctrines. Now that comment about the state's attack, and it was led by six angry dissidents, former ministers of the Worldwide Church of God, that just simply, they wanted the power to change the doctrines of the church. They didn't like the way the church was being run. They didn't like the doctrines of the church, so they wanted to try to take over and change it all. Well, you could just as easily say that about the group heading up the Worldwide Church of God in 1997. I mean, it was Ralph Helge this time who wrote a letter to us saying that we've got to stop printing and distributing Mystery of the Ages. Same thing in a lot of ways, only this time, sadly, Mr. Helge sided with the dissident takeover. We played a video in Doctrines this morning. All of these, I forget when it was made, late 90s or early 2000s, but all of these former ministers and members of the Worldwide Church of God just up there talking about how crazy Mr. Armstrong was and how they were hooked into coming into the Worldwide Church of God. I mean, they did acknowledge that it was a message that went right around the world and a lot of people responded. But of course, they renounced all those teachings. And they were proudly declaring the fact that they renounced it in this video, saying that Mr. Armstrong was this or that, and, well, we used to believe this and that. I mean, how could we ever have believed these kinds of things? And you know what it boils down to for all of them? They didn't like the doctrines of the church. They didn't like God's law. That's what it amounts to. They wanted to transgress. They wanted to break the commandments. They didn't want to obey the Sabbath command. They didn't like the commandment about adultery. They didn't like those commandments. They wanted to do away with it. They wanted to throw it out the window. And they wanted the power to change it from the top down. And sadly, so many people in the church just let it happen because they were weak. They were caught up into transgressions as well. Now look, we're all sinners. We all make mistakes. But God didn't bring us into the church to live in sin. God called us out of this world so that we could overcome sin, so that we could overcome the devil, so that we could abide by the Ten Commandments, honoring our parents, avoiding hatred and lying and cheating and stealing and adultery and fornication, and dishonoring God and taking His name in vain, just having the utmost respect and love for our Creator God and submitting to His authority and rule and striving with the help and power of God and by the faith of Christ to obey His laws. If we do that, then we'll be in a safe place. And more than that, we'll be able to do the work that God's given us to do. I mean, the daily was buried. The work was demolished because of transgression. Mr. Helge said in that 1979 article, we've got certain rules and we've got doctrines. If you like them, tremendous. And if you don't, or if I don't, I'll point to myself. Then I'll go to the church that teaches doctrines I do like. But I don't come in here and try to change the way Mr. Armstrong has set the doctrines, he said in 1979. Well, he did that later, though. And so did a whole host of others. They grabbed control of the church as soon as Mr. Armstrong died, and they started changing everything that Mr. Armstrong had set and established in the church. We, as it happens, during the court case litigation, we reminded Mr. Helge of those statements he made in 1979, and he just brushed it aside, saying that, well, that's different. That's different. I mean, the attack back then was from the outside, which it was. And the attack in 1986 was from the inside. And in both cases, you had angry, disobedient leaders or former leaders of the Worldwide Church of God who just didn't like the doctrines, the teachings, the laws. They can describe it any other way that they want, like many of them do on that video we show our students. But this is what it boils down to. It's right there in Daniel 8. The work stopped because of transgression. The work stopped because of sin. And when we come back, we'll talk about what God did to revive the work, to restore the work to what it once was. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
I'm speaking to you from our television studios in Pasadena, where I speak to the world as a voice crying out in the wilderness of modern religious confusion.
Herbert W. Armstrong was the world's leading televangelist and one of the most prominent religious leaders of the 20th century, watched, read, and followed by millions worldwide. But his legacy of Bible-based humanitarianism came under attack after he died. The cabal of leaders who took control of the church he founded, after pledging to follow in his footsteps, methodically destroyed all he had built. Those who would stop them were silenced or excommunicated. This shocking story of betrayal and deception is told in Raising the Ruins. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
Now he said, this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed or preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come.
Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. The Trumpet Daily.
The book of Daniel is for this end time, and the prophet Daniel prophesied about a 1150-day period where the work of God would just simply stop. It would stop, and that it is the only work of God, and it just simply wasn't there anymore.
That's from another program my father gave back in 2005, again talking about the Daniel 8 prophecy, the 1150-day prophecy, and going back to what we covered in the first segment, verse 12 again, by reason of transgression. This is how it all happened. This is how the work stopped, because of transgression or sin. Here's another clip from another show. This is the 1150 days prophecy, also from 2005. Here's clip 6.
They were losing this battle because the people of God were transgressing. Verse 11. That's the people had no faith. God's people were losing their faith, and the angels were losing the work and the battle for God's work because of transgression. They were transgressing the law. They were rebelling against God, and Satan conquered them. That's the way it works, and that's the way it's always been when you look at the Bible. If you rebel, then Satan conquers you. That, and then you get miserable like he is, and you become unhappy, and there's no singing for joy or shouting for joy.
That's from 2005. That's how it always happens, as he says. Rebellion against God's law, it opens us up to Satan's attack. That's how we are conquered. That's how we lose faith. That's how we're not able to do the work. It always gets back to rebellion. It always comes back to God's law. Here's a video, an hour and 15 minutes. People up there on camera denouncing Mr. Armstrong, saying that, well, he got this prophecy wrong, or, well, we used to teach this, or he got this from some study back in 1927 or 26. His wife gave him this. Or, well, with respect to the U.S. and Britain in prophecy, he got this from some author from back in the 1800s. And really what it boils down to is rebellion against God's law. They don't like the law of God. They might as well be on video denouncing the author of those laws, God himself. That's what it is. They're hostile to God's law. They hate God's law. They didn't like it. They didn't like the teachings. They didn't like the doctrines. They didn't just turn and go find a church that taught the doctrines they liked. They came into the church of God and changed the very doctrines and teachings that God had established. That's the truth. Well, God had a solution. As this prophecy brings out, verse 13 of Daniel 8, it says, "Then I heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spoke, How long shall be the vision concerning the daily and the transgression," there it is again, "transgression of desolation, to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot." I mean, how long is this going to go on? How long is the work going to stop? That's what this angel asked. And we can be ever grateful to God for the fact that he had a plan in place that would not allow the work of God to just stop forever. As it says in verse 14, "And he said unto me, unto 2,300 days or sacrifices," that's the meaning. You can look into any good commentary on that. "Then shall the sanctuary be cleansed." The Revised Standard Version says, "for 2,300 evenings and mornings." Or in other words, for 1,150 days. "Then the sanctuary would be cleansed," or restored is a better word. It would be restored. The work would resume. My father writes in the Daniel booklet, "Shortly before his death in 1986, even though the work had grown abundantly for 7 years, Mr. Armstrong still perceived a liberal undercurrent within the church. He even said there were those who, like vultures, wanted him to die so that they could take over the church. Then on January 16th, 1986, Mr. Armstrong was taken out of the way. On that day, the great spiritual war of Daniel 8 began." 1,150 days, the work stopped. Here's my father explaining that that prophecy in the 1,150 days prophecy from 2005, clip 7.
Now, it's actually 1,150 days, and practically any commentary will tell you this, not 2,300 days, because they had morning and afternoon, or morning and evening sacrifices, and it should be just half that. So it's 1,150 days, and God says, now at the end of this 1,150 days, in this end time, the sanctuary will be cleansed, God's people will be restored, and the work of God will be restored, and a great miracle will occur that this world knows virtually nothing about. But God's people, God's very elect, knows all about it in amazing detail. As God says they must, if they are His people, it must be understood. But I tell you, this is some of the most inspiring prophecy you'll find in the Bible. And to imagine God is calculating days and shows it how we can count those days, and even find a place where God's truth was and then it was cast down.
That's from my father's show in 2005, The Key of David. But what an amazing prophecy this is. All of this detail. An inspiring prophecy, as inspiring as any that you'll find in the Bible. And obviously, there's a lot of people in the world today that are not clued in here to the significance of this prophecy, but to God's people, I mean, this is This is astounding that God would even to the day, he says in this vision, all right, for 1,150 days. So Mr. Armstrong dies on January the 16th, 1986. And as my father has described before, I mean, following his death, Joseph Tkach Sr. took over, not Jr., but Joseph Tkach Jr. certainly factored in significantly to this great falling away, as I read earlier from 2 Thessalonians 2. But in any event, my father said that, after Mr. Armstrong's death, he sent an invite to Mr. Tkach Sr., hoping that Mr. Tkach Sr. would be able to come out to visit the Oklahoma City congregation and the surrounding congregations there in central Oklahoma, and he did that. In other words, he was supportive of the changeover. He was supportive of the new administration for a time until he started seeing these very disturbing changes coming out of Pasadena. What could be happening? He told some of us in a lecture about 20 years ago that for 3 years or so, even though that third year there were some disturbing changes surfacing, well, really, they were happening, as we now know, even before Mr. Armstrong's death. But, I mean, they were becoming more obvious. But then it was in the fourth year, while he was still in the Worldwide Church of God, while he was disturbed by these changes coming out of Pasadena, that God began to pour into his mind this Malachi's message, revelation. And he began to understand about the Laodicean era of God's church. This is what it says in the Daniel Unsealed at Last booklet. He says, using January 16th, 1986 as our beginning point, makes Saturday, March 11th, 1989, the end of the 1,150 days. So March 11, 1989. It says, as most of our readers know, I was fired from the Worldwide Church of God on December 7th, 1989. So he was fired later that year, December 7th, 1989, for upholding what Mr. Armstrong taught. That was nearly 9 months after the 1,150 days ended. But as most of you know, I was fired for what I had been writing in my manuscript, later printed as Malachi's message. And I had been working on that manuscript for nearly 9 months. He says, though I don't remember the exact date God began revealing Malachi's message to me, it's safe to say that it was on or around March 11th, 1989. It's safe to say it because of the prophecies. Well, because of the history as he's bringing out here. But the prophecies as well. How long is this going to go on? How long is the work going to be stopped? And it says it right there in Daniel 8 and verse 14. For 1,150 days. You can read about some of this history in Malachi's message and also in Raising the Ruins. But if you go back to what was happening in January, the early part of the year, 1989, the church announced that it was removing Mystery of the Ages from publication or distribution. It was canceling Mystery of the Ages. That was announced on January 31st, 1989. And then 2 weeks later in the PGR, Mr. Tkach addressed the subject of the book being shelved, and he tried to explain that, well, it was this and this and this, and it's costly, and there's a few minor errors and this and that. Basically, they didn't tell the real reason until years later. They didn't like the doctrines. They did not like the doctrines, the teachings, the laws. Well, they were saying one thing in January, in February of 1989, and as it happens, I was a freshman at college that year. My father called me on February the 17th, and I know this because of some things I jotted down in my journal. But he called me on February the 17th, and he said some of the things that ministers are saying today in this church would have gotten them fired if Mr. Armstrong was still around. He was really upset. He was disturbed by what ministers were saying, by what ministers were doing. And he went on to talk about some of those announcements in the PGR about Mystery of the Ages being discontinued because of the so-called minor errors or because it was expensive. And, of course, some of this was news to me. I wasn't quite up to date on some of the most recent literature that the church was producing. But my father was, he was reading it closely, carefully analyzing it, scrutinizing it, everything that was coming out of Pasadena, because so much of it was so disturbing. Well, in the course of that conversation, he said that we may very well be in the Laodicean era, a statement that really did startle me as a freshman at God's College. The Laodicean era. I mean, all of us in the church had known about that prophecy, and we thought it would be fulfilled in the Great Tribulation, but it's happening before, as we now know. God was beginning to work on his mind. My father even mentioned during that conversation that I should read the Old Testament prophet, his book, the book of Malachi. And this conversation took place 22 days before the 1150 days ended. So my father there in the Daniel booklet, he's talking about how he was fired on December 7th, 1989, and how that was a full 9 months or so after the 1150 days ended. And here's an exchange I had with him just a few days before the 1150 days ended. And you can see where his mind was. You can see what he was about to get into. He was just weeks away from actually sitting down and writing Malachi's message. And no doubt something significant happened in his mind on March 11th, 1989. God began to give him the message. And it was just a few months after that I was able to read the first draft of Malachi's message, the rough draft of Malachi's message, on July 16th, 1989. That's another important anniversary that maybe we'll talk about later this year on July 16th. In any event, it says here, verse 14 again, "And he said to me, unto 300 days, or 1150 days, as it says more accurately in the Revised Standard Version. Here's what my father had to say in that 1150 days program from 2005, clip 5.
But there is a small remnant of God's people who did fight and fought victoriously and started the work back up again, or restored it, after 1150 days. Now, when did that battle take place? I mean, this is one of the most supreme battles of the end time. When did it happen? Where did it happen? Do you know anything about it?
Well, it's all discussed in the Daniel Unsealed at Last booklet and in some of the other writings of my father as well. But that would be a good place to start, following the anniversary. Just yesterday, 29 years on, March 11th, 1989, after 1150 days, the sanctuary was cleansed. And that work revolved around Malachi's message to God's church today. God started to cleanse. God started to restore the work. And it all got back to getting back to the laws of God, removing transgression, so that we could carry on and do the work. That's what this church has been about from the very beginning. And only this church, not two or three or four others, but only this church actually fought against the worldwide church of God from 1997 to 2003 so that we could distribute the truth of God. Mystery of the Ages, incredible human potential. The United States and Britain in prophecy. What a battle it was. A battle for God's truth. Well, really, you can go all the way back to 1989 to see where this battle really started, where the work resumed. What a prophecy. And a prophecy that was penned thousands of years ago. That's what's amazing. Here's one more clip from my father's programs. This is clip 8.
Can you imagine God over 2,500 years ago giving us all of this minute detail about Daniel for this end time? Can you imagine the mind that God has and the power He has? Can you imagine how much He knows about you and me and what's going on in His church and what isn't going on and what's going on in this world? A God with this mind and this power who could prophesy all this over 2,500 years ago.
It's pretty amazing, the power and the might of the great Creator God to put this out there 2,500 years in advance so that we can know what's going on in the church. Is God concerned about the activities of the church, the affairs of the church? Is He concerned about what's going on in your life, your individual life, your personal life? And as a supporter of God's work, are you really serious and committed in your quest to come out of sin, to overcome our adversary, the devil, and to deliver to this world this only message of hope, the only one that there is in the world? My father wrote, this was following March 11th back in 2011. He reminded us of this date back then. He said, March 11th, reminds us, as we are prone to forget, that we have an urgent message that must be delivered. And that's why we're here. He says God doesn't give us new revelation in vain. He wants it delivered to this dying world. We have a job to do. We have a work to finish. He hasn't given us this message in vain. It must be delivered. It's an urgent message. In Colossians 1, I'll just conclude with this. Verses 9 and 10, it talks about how that we ought to be increasing in the knowledge of God. Walk worthy of the eternal, unto all pleasing, it says there. Be fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. I mean, knowledge alone is not going to guarantee right performance. We've got to be doers. We've got to take, that's what it means to increase in the knowledge. You're using it. It's more than just having the knowledge. Lucifer had it. All those people on the video that we just saw this morning in doctrines, they had it. The Laodiceans had it. But they all lost it because of transgression. Because of sin, they lost the truth of God. If we hold on to it, if we apply it, so long as we don't deceive ourselves by just being hearers of the word only, but if we're doing it, then as the next verse says, verse 11, strengthened with might, with all might, according to His glorious power, unto all patience and long-suffering with joyfulness. See, God is our source of power. We're strengthened with all might if we're growing and increasing in the knowledge of God. That 2011 article or coworker letter that my father wrote, he talked about the importance of just putting our heart in God's work, just pouring our heart into this effort to take this message, to deliver this message to a dying world. It's an urgent message. The Laodiceans got caught up in transgressions, and they didn't have their heart in God's work. It wasn't their top priority. That's the challenge before us. To make it our top priority, to put our hearts in God's work. You know what Mr. Armstrong said, so many of you do, about only those who have their hearts in the work are also growing spiritually. We have to get this message out to the United States, to Great Britain, to Little Judah, to the people of Laodicea, to God's people that have fallen away from the truth. That is why we're here. That's why we exist. That's why God brought us into the church. So that we could get this message out, so that we could get our minds off of ourselves and onto this glorious commission, this glorious work that God's given us to do. All of it prophesied, that restoration, right there in the eighth chapter of the book of Daniel. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.